Right. So, even a little worm should not be worked. Okay?
Made
or represented if it's going to be worked.
Okay. And the Gemara says, Taka in
Hachinom, yeah, that's Taka so. The Tanya, because we have another teaching which says, Asher b'oret, you know, again in the Ten Commandments, it says, upon earth, the Rabbos. That includes Orim, Ugmos, you're not allowed to worship the mountains and the hills, Yamim, the Horos, or the seas, the rivers, Atikim. Atikim are like small valleys that carry water, you know, the Geyors, and those are the bigger valleys, the Tachas, which are down below, also the Ten Commandments. Excuse me, the Geyors, right? So in other words, don't make pictures of these things. For what? Not to worship them. But the question is, I mean, are we allowed to have representative art? My wife allowed to make a picture of a farmhouse or a field or something like that? The answer is yes, because then we rely upon what a buyer had to say. That if the intent is only to make it into a, you know, a matter of worship, then in that case, that would be prohibited. But if it's being simply used as representative art, then that's all there is to it. So in that case, it's permissible. Right. In that case, it's permissible. Okay. And finally, the last word taken from the Ten Commandments that they quote over here. Right. It says betachas. And what is betachas? Those things that are down below. It's larabos, not to include even shilchul kot, even the tiniest worm, because, you know, that's way down in the ground, right? So far, if we follow Abaye, then it's permissible. But as we see, not everybody is happy with Abaye's rule, right? So this is what the Gemara asks them. The next question says, well, see a greater term, show it. Are you really permitted just to make something? Oh, Tanya, after all, didn't we learn, Lo Sasun Iti, shalt not make with me, means Lo Sasun Kitmu Shamshai, Shamshin Shamai, do not make anything in the image of my servants that serve before me, Kigon Kama, Lugona, Kechim, my Solois, as for example, the sun, the moon, the stars, planets. So naturally, who are we finally asking the question about? The answer is, we're really asking the question about Rabban Gamliel, who, as we learned from the Mishnah, what had he done? He made pictures of the moon, various types of representations of the moon, and he had them over there in his attic. And when the Hedyotas, in other words, ordinary people who came to testify that they had seen the new moon, he could question them, he could ask them, did it look like this, did it look like that, and so on and so on. Besides the other questions that they were asked, was it in the front, was it in the back, was it in the north, was it in the south, and so on and so on. How high was it? These are all questions that we learned last week. Okay. So, Shani Rabban Gamliel. So now the Gemara says, look, don't make an example of Rabban Gamliel. Don't ask this question about it because he is in a different category. Why? Explanation number one, the Acherim Motzvah. One theory is that he didn't actually make these representations of the moon, but instead somebody else made it for it. Well, of course, that would raise another question. Needless to say, can you have a goy do something for you if it's a violation of Jewish law? Now, then that's a big problem. What can you tell a goy, for example, to do on Shabbos for you? Can you tell him to violate Shabbos for you? The answer is no. But whether you make it, you know, persuade him to do something which is for the common good or something like that, it's already a different story. There are all kinds of stories about that. You know. Like, for example, the Jew who wanted a hot glass of tea, so he called the goy, he called Ivan into his kitchen, and he said, Ivan, you know what? If you're coming over here, you know, he's dark in the kitchen, right? If you're coming over here, then you can get a drink of rum. So Ivan came in, he put on the light in order to see where the pot of Brompton was, right? and then he helped himself to the fountain. And lo and behold, what did he do? He didn't. He finished his drink. He put out the light. So this is the problem, you know. Madira La'at is telling the joy to do something for you on the right. That's a problem. How do you approach it? Okay. Right. So, yeah, well, if you made the arrangements before Shabbos and he simply does it on his own, and he knows what he has to do, but he does it on his own without having to be told on Shabbos, then that already would be a different kind of thing. Right. Okay. So, but, so, as I say, explanation number one is everything. All right. And so they say, well, Rabbi Huda, hey, how about in the case of Rabbi Huda, Ba'achayim Otsilo, where others made something for him which was not permissible. He himself couldn't do it, but others did it for him, right? And the Amalei Shmuel Rabbi Huda, and Shmuel, seeing what had been done, he said to Rabbi Huda, he said to Mishinima, he said, you know, Chochem, we say we should not come to the Nechem, right? And teach them, we translate, teach them diligently in Greek. So, Shinanol is a word of the Gemara that means, you know, sharp scholar. The word Lashanim in Hebrew also means, you know, to sharpen something, okay? So, he says, boy, you're a sharp guy, he said. Actually, what was it that they had made for him? So Rashi explained, this was a signet ring. Now remember, in those days, people didn't normally write their name to him. They sent a letter, what did they do? They would write a letter, and then they would take wax, hot wax, you know, take a ring, and make an impression, and seal it that way, okay? You still have occasion to see something sealed with wax. You know, I haven't seen it in a long time, but once in a while you used to see it, okay? So, he said to him, okay, now, this particular signet ring that he had, obviously had the picture of a human being, a face on it, okay? So, he said to him, Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, Stamei Eini D'Dei. He says, you know what, knock out the eye, blind the eye, literally, of this thing. In other words, make a change in it so that it doesn't look like a perfect representation. I have to tell you a personal story, okay? Shortly after Adam and I were married, we were Niagara Falls. And, you know, this is back in 1944, during the war, and, you know, Niagara Falls, already you decided to cross the bridge over into Canada and see what it looks like. We crossed the bridge to Canada, and there's, you know, a souvenir store, okay? So we bought a creamer with the representation of Churchill's face on it, okay? And we bought it home. Anne's mother, she rest in peace, very, very firm, Hasidic family, a father too, you know, he was a long string of Hasidic, very, I don't have to explain, but okay. Huh? Just to mean, do they mean anything to you? Yeah, okay. They were different than us. So she saw it. She said, how could you bear to have that over here? Please knock out, please chip off something from the face of it. So I said, but look, if, you see, he has a hole in his head over here. That's for the cleaver.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do anything more. A hole in the head.
So
we kept it. Right. But the point that I'm making is simply this. She wanted, you know, she along the lines of what we see over here, where he says, Sama in the day, he says, knock out the eye or blind the eye of this one, you know, do something to make it less perfect. So that is not an exact reproduction. Sure. prohibited. Yehuda, you know, Shmuel said to him, go. Because people, the shot of people means that you have suspicions about you, suspect that they, you know, they're doing something wrong, okay? And because he wanted to prevent people beginning to talk, you know, hey, Rabbi Yehuda, do you see that, you know, that signet ring that he has over there? What kind of a Talmud Chacham is he? He's carrying around an idolatrous ring or something like that. So in order to prevent that, he says, that's why he made that suggestion. Kiddikanya, as we have learned tomorrow, which says, Tabaz, when it comes to a ring, Kosamo Bolate, if the sealing part projects, then also Lahanicho, then you're not allowed to leave it on your hand, you're not allowed to keep it on your finger, okay? But Umutalach Bumba, but you are permitted to use it as a seal. All right. Remember, if it sticks out while you're wearing it, it looks like you have an idolatrous symbol that you're carrying on your thing. You understand? But put it in the wax, and of course, the impression is down below, is deep. And that already doesn't look the same as it. So therefore, he says, that you could use just for the purpose of sealing the letter, okay? But not to carry it. On the other hand, Pung Pakeot, as we would say, on the opposite side, right? Chosamo Shokeo, what if the sealing part is recessed, right? Then mutalahadniko, then it is permitted to leave it on your hand, because as we said before, if it's a, you know, if it's recessed, then it doesn't look genuine. But the oisalachomba, but it is prohibited to seal with it. Okay. So now the Gemara says the following question, the but are we really worried, are we really concerned about this element of shock? Of suspicion of somebody, you know, that he may be addicted to idolatry because of something like this. I'll give you a better example, they said, that maybe it's not something to tell, right? It's not to tell. There was a certain shul, the Shach V'Yosef, and it's called the Shach V'Yosef shul, Dinahado. Dinahado was a great big Jewish community, it had great scholars and everything else, right? And in this shul, yeah, in Babylonia, right? And in this shul, there was a statue, okay? The Abba-Bail got there as a statue. There was a statue over there, okay? And they said, not only that, but the Abba-Ayale Rabbi Shmuel, Babu-Hadar Shmuel, Levi, the Master Hussein. You know who would come and bother in that particular place? Roth came. Well, these are the great giants, you know, the people who brought Torah back to Babylonia, right? Rav and Shmuel, and Shmuel's father, who was also a renowned scholar, and Levi, another renowned scholar, and they were bothering over there. You know, Chai Shem Chashto. But people didn't suspect that they were guilty of idolatry because they davened in a place where there was the statue. Well, obviously, what kind of a statue was? Well, the answer was the statue of the king. So, you know, it's like a mark of allegiance or something like that. Although I have to tell you, that doesn't mean that therefore you're permitted to have statues of kings. We're not. I'll quote you another story afterwards, okay? But nevertheless, there was justification made for this, and they said that, you know, people wouldn't suspect. Now, why wouldn't they suspect? It says, Rabbi Mishama says, when you have multitudes coming in over there, you have crowds, people, and so on, so you know, they're not all addicted to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry, by coming to daven in the place where we have this statue, okay? So they said, yeah, but before Rabbi Gamliel Yochid Hu, but Rabbi Gamliel was not Rabin, right? He wasn't a lot of people, he was only an individual. And in an individual case, you might suspect that maybe he would be guilty of it. So they said, not in the case of Rabbi Gamliel. Why? Cave in the Nasihu, First of all, inasmuch as he was the prince, the Nasi, of the Jewish community, so Shechichi Rabin Rabbi, that lots of people would come to visit him. So already it's like Rabbi, even though he's an individual, right? And Ibai Seimo, and if you wish, I have a different explanation. That the Frachim Hala, okay, that actually the representations that he had on the moon, these came in part.
So if you can break it up into its little parts, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You put it together again, and something that so makes something. But there's no sanctity to something which comes in parts. Okay.
The Eboy Seymour, and if you wish, have another explanation. The other explanation is the Slavic Rabban.
He wanted to learn, he wanted to explain to others, you know, the various bases of the moon so that they would know, you know, whether the testimony of the witnesses could be relied upon as being genuine or not. And therefore, that's the reason why he made it.
Uchsiyat, and we have a prophet which says, Leisil Mavlasers, the rest of the pasuk is, and you shall not learn to do keso avos agoyim pahein. You should not learn to follow the practices, the word means the abominations, right? Of those nations. Okay, so avol atol lo mei gohavinu haros, but you are permitted to learn in order to understand, you know, what they were like, what was their philosophy, what were their practices,
and be able to teach not to do these things. So
in order to know
what to teach, you have to review your subject matter beforehand and familiarize yourself with these things. Okay? So, I said, you know, about stature, okay? It's a different story that the Chazal tell about Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was victorious in his campaigns and he was ready to besiege the city of Yerushalayim, okay? So people of Yerushalayim came out in order to welcome him, and at the head was Shimon HaTzadik, who was the high priest, okay? And when Shimon HaTzadik, who was a venerable, holy, pious person, approached Alexander, Alexander got off his horse and bowed down to him. So the officers of Alexander, his generals, his ministers, they said to him, "How come you bow down to this Jew?" So he said, "Well, I'll tell you, I had a dream. And I saw this man in my dream, and he said to me that I would be victorious in all my battles. And that's why I'm showing him honor." Okay, so that's fine so far, right? So he came to Yerushalayim, and then he said to the people of Yerushalayim, the Jewish people, he said, "I want you to make a statue of me in the Beis HaMikdash." No, I don't have to tell you that the Jews were in consternation, right? What to do? So they said to him, "We'll make a deal. The deal is, you know, we're not allowed to make any statue, even of you, King Alexander, right? As great as you are, but we're not to make a statue of any human being, because, you know, it's prohibited by the Torah. But we'll honor you that any boy born this year will have the name Alexander." And that's how Alexander became a Jewish name. Mm-hmm. But from this we see, of course, that making a statue to a king is not something that should be done. And of course, the whole business with Achashmonaim at a later period, this was also, they did not want to have a statue of Zeus, who certainly was the Greek god, in the Beis HaMikdash. It's an abomination, right? So you can't do it, right? Yeah, listen, Yerushalayim, you'll also find statues today. Because, people do like the goyim. So they do it. But I would say probably there are fewer statues than you find in Washington. Okay. I also have to say something else.
you go on a trip to Israel, you'll come to certain synagogues where they have mosaics on the floor. Well, these are synagogues that existed 2,000 years ago, you understand? They date back, you know, either to the beginning of the Common Era or maybe the first or second century and things like that, okay? And you find mosaics, for example, in Golgotha and some other places, okay? And you'll find on the floor, either they have pictures of biblical stories, or they have, for example, a reproduction of the zodiac, with the various, you know, the lion and the scale and the fish and things like that, you know, representing the different signs of the zodiac, okay? So you do find that they were not that strict in those days against it. In modern times, what do we find in shuls? The answer is, you know, in Eastern Europe they began to make representations of, for example, the lions holding the luchos. You've seen that, I'm sure, right? Yeah. Or they may have a representation, let's say, of a deer and a lion and so on, and based upon what we say in Pirkei Avos, that you should be rutz katzvi, right? You should be a swift, run as fast as a deer. The gibor kari, you know, and to be as strong as a lion, lasos es ono yichesh b'shamayim, you know, in order to do the will of God in heaven. So therefore, there are certain things. You'll find Matzorim, for example, with pictures of Moshe and Aaron and what, you know, the yochid and boaz, the pillars in the Beis HaMikdash. So they did not necessarily interpret it as strictly some of the Gemaras that we have over here, where it says you're not allowed to make anything, no representation of anything that serves me. But we have to rely again upon Abaye's opinion, namely, the of dom means don't make these things in order to make them into a source of worship. But simply to look at something, there's no prohibition on that. So, it's an interesting business, you know. But, you know, there are people even to this very day, they are opposed to art, they're opposed even to taking pictures. They turn away, they don't want to, you go to Meir Shorim, some people don't want to be snapped. Okay? Yeah.
My question is, in Sepori, was that... Sepori, which
yeah, yeah, that was a big yeshiva they had.
Okay, so that was also in the Beit Knesset.
Roman
and
right, and right, of course, no question. Yeah, it's a big Jewish community. Okay, I think we'll stop. We are now at the very bottom. Opened up, right? We're ready to start a brand new Mishnah that we'll learn next week in Yitzhak Hashem. Okay, tonight is the 28th of June. My mic was down in 30 years. Thank you. I'll say, you wonder, you look back, right, 20 years ago. Yeah, they were married in Holyoke. Right. Yes, exactly. We married in Rosh Hashanah. Michael, who is married. Right. We are starting with a brand new Mishnah tonight. We are now on Rosh Hashanah. 1 second. Okay. Yeah, correct. At the very bottom of page Chav Dalet Amud Beis. That's why I said we had one more line to go over there, and then we'll continue on the next round. Pardon me? That's the first sheet that I gave you. The bottom line over there, and then we'll continue with the next sheet. Okay? Alright. Now, I want to remind you that the last few weeks we've been dealing with the problem of accepting the testimony of witnesses to make sure, you know, that when they say before the Beis Din that they actually saw the new moon, we know that they're not faking it, because we had stories, first of all, about how people like the Baisusim and Sibukim and so on, In other words, people who were heretics, they wanted to cause confusion among the Jewish people, and therefore they engaged in false testimony. They hired false witnesses, and at another time they issued false signals. Remember the signifiers, so that the Bezdin was forced to send messages henceforth in order to let people know when Rosh Chodesh was. And because once you know when Rosh Chodesh is, then you can figure out when festivals like Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and so on fall. And of course, the big problem is when they come, as to when it occurs. And that is one of the basic reasons why we're studying it in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, because that's a very, very important factor that we have to know. Rosh Hashanah, like all the other holidays, is right at new moon. And therefore, it's very important, you know, for them to know exactly when was new moon. Okay. Now, the Mishnah begins by saying, Maaseh Shebo Shnayim, there's a tale told about two witnesses who came. The Omru, and they said to the Bezdin, Renuhu Shachris B'Mizrach, the Arviz B'Ma'arav. So they said, you know what? In the morning, we saw it in the east. The question is, what is the east? What is the it? The answer is, we saw the old moon in the morning, and we saw it in the east. And at night, we saw the new moon in the west. All right, so in other words, what are they saying? They're saying that the period of time in between the sighting of the old moon, and then, of course, its disappearance during the day, and then the appearance at night, is a rather short period. And because it was a short period, so Omar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri said, Eidei Shekahem, these are false witnesses. Because how could they say that, you know, there was so short a period between the old moon and the sighting of the new moon? Okay? Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I need a second one too. That is absolutely right. About 18 hours.
So the problem that they have over here is that it would seem that if they saw it in the morning and then they saw the new moon at night, that it would be a little too short a period of time. Right, right, right. So this is the reason why Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri said that these are false witnesses. You cannot rely upon their testimony. Okay? Huh? That's already a different story. There are also witnesses who testify falsely. But the trouble with Eidei Zomedin is that they deliberately testifying falsely because they want to harm somebody else.
They're usually hired by somebody.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Right. Whereas a false witness over here can simply be
a mistake.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So it seems simple right now, right? But when they came to the yeshiva in Yavne, where Rabbi Yochanan and Ben Zakkai, which he had founded, and afterwards he was succeeded by Rabbi Gamliel, who is now the head of the Beis Din over there in Yavne. Remember, you know, that the Beis Din in Yerushalayim was destroyed by the Romans. But they tried as much as possible in order to carry on the authority of the original Sanhedrin. And it was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who was able to get permission to establish a new yeshiva in Yavne, and there's where you know he asserted it. And then he was followed by Rabbi Gamliel, okay, who was a very, very important, you know, not only the Abbesim, but as we'll see, he was a person who had a great deal of authority and wanted to make sure that people would recognize his authority. We'll see that as we go along tonight, okay? All right. So, when they got to Yavne, Kiblan Rabbi Gamliel, so Rabbi Gamliel accepted them. In other words, what did he say? Yeah, the testimony is correct, and on that basis, actually, then proceeded to declare when Rosh Chodesh was. Okay? The old Boish Naim, now they tell another story about another two witnesses who came, and they said, we knew who Bismano. We saw it at the right time. Now, the right time would mean on the 30th day of the month. In other words, it means that the month is 29 days, right? Like, for example, let's say a month like... June has 30 days, that's correct, but I'm thinking in terms of the Hebrew calendar, okay? Like, for example, the month of Iyar has 29 days, okay? So naturally, when is Rosh Chodesh Sivan? That's the day after. It's what we would say is the 30th day, okay? But of course, they didn't remember that they went on the basis of sighting, okay? So they said, that we knew Bismano, we saw it at the proper time, which would mean that we saw the new moon on the 30th, right? Well, the Lael Iburo, but on the following night, in other words, the night when it would have made an additional, we would say like a second day of Shadish, right? Lo Nira, the moon did not appear at all. So, the Kibbutz and Rabbi Gamliel nevertheless accepted their testimony. Omer Rabbi Dosa bet Horkimas. So Rabbi Dosa bet Horkimas said, Edei Shekahe. They are false witnesses. Eich me'idim al ha'isha she'yolda. How could they testify concerning the woman that she has given birth with a mocha and on the following day Teresa ben Shineha. Her belly is swelling so big that it's as though it's sticking out as far as her teeth are concerned.
She's twins, right.
The analogy. Okay.
Because here it seems to say that they saw the new moon
right.
One night. The second night it could have been a cloud cover or something.
Oh, well, that's a possibility, but that's not what the mission speaks of. You understand? All right, it's a good question that you raised. Because, maybe Taka Rabbi Gamliel thought along the same lines as your point, right? But Rabbi Dosa ben Horkimas disagrees. I mean, he says, how can you testify that here the moon, the month has been born, so to speak. You understand? That's what he says, And then you say the next night, when we would expect, to see the moon, because it's already, the next day of the month, and they say that they did not see the moon. The moon did not appear at all. Okay? So, it's a famous expression, by the way, Teresa ben Shineha, right? Refer to a woman who's very obviously pregnant. Okay? So, the moon, too, is very obviously pregnant. Okay? So, Amalur Yeshua. So, Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Dosa ben Horkimas, you know what he said to him? He said, well, that is to a Racha. Literally, I see your words, which means I agree with you. Okay? In other words, we have to say that the testimony that they gave, wherein they said that they saw the moon on the 30th, actually was false testimony, and that the month should have begun on the 31st. Okay? This is what he's saying. All right? So now we'll see what happens. This is what they said. They said they saw it on the 29th. Rabbi Gamliel accepted their testimony,
right.
And therefore, the 30th day was made into the study because we see that that's mine on the 29th. So right. Whereas, according to the comment from Rabbi Gamliel, he knows and says, how could it be? It can't be if they say that they still didn't see the moon on the following night, right? So if that's the case, then it means that the beginning of the month should have been a day later, according to those that I'm talking about. Yeah, but the point is, we already learned before that if the 29th, if they did not sight it on the 29th, right, then automatically the next day, the next night is going to be beginning of Rosh Chodesh, okay? We learned that before, There was a whole matlokes that we had, when should the Beis Din say the kudos? What opinion was, if it occurred, if they decided on the 29th? Of course it's Gus, Gavalkin.
I don't know. I'm comfortable.
The air conditioning.
Yeah.
The fire looks like
all right. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Okay.
Maybe this is an overhaul.
Yeah. All right. So, we learned, when is the best thing to declare? So we had different opinions, but the prevailing opinion, this is what we learned last week, was that if it was not seen in Smano, in other words, it was not seen on the 29th, so that the next day automatically is concluded, then in that case, the following day first becomes Mishkan.
Does that mean that then they count the 30 days?
The 30th.
That's right. Then it means that the 30th day belongs to the old month and not to the new month. Right. Okay. Remember, this Shabbos will be mentioned Rosh Chodesh. Okay? The Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. When is Rosh Chodesh Tammuz? It's going to be on Monday and Tuesday. Okay? Now, does it mean, therefore, that Monday is the first day of the month of Tammuz? The answer is no. It's instead the 30th of the month of Sivan, right? And then the following day, Tuesday, will be the first day of Tammuz. Okay. Yeah, whenever you have 2 days for shortage. The first one is the 30th of the preceding month, and the second is actually the first day of the new month. Why is that? So we'll discover. The basic reason is that between one new moon and another, it has to be at least 29 and a half days. And since we can't have a half day Rosh Chodesh, so you have to go either one way or the other. Either 29 or you go 30. Okay? So this is the way it works. Okay. Alright, so getting back over here, so we see that Rabbi Yoshua now says, I agree with you, Rabbi Dosa ben Horkina. Okay, so that therefore, in other words, according to my calculation, it should have been not the day declared by Rabbi Gamliel, but the following day. That's really Rosh Chodesh. Right, okay, that's the picture right now. So, Shalach lo Rabbi Gamliel. So, Rabbi Gamliel, obviously, he must have heard this comment. Whether he heard it directly or indirectly, whatever it is, but he heard this comment. And so he sent the following message to Rabbi Yehoshua. And he said to him, Goes Reini Olecha, I make a decree concerning you. In other words, you must obey my decree, Shetovo etzni, that you should come to me, Bimakelcho v'moasecha, with your stick, staff, the walking stick that you need, and also with your money. When? The Yom HaKippurim, on Yom Kippur, Shechol Yos B'Cheshbon Echa, according to your Cheshbon. In other words, I am celebrating Yom Kippur on this day. You say that Yom Kippur is the following day. I say you have to appear before me on the day that you think is Yom Kippur and come as if you were Bochadik. You understand what I mean? Come Bochadik. Right, he's challenging them exactly because it feels, yeah, it's a famous story. Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Otherwise, it wouldn't carry.
Of course, it can't carry. So.
Before you continue, let me ask a question.
Sure.
Yeah. Why is it sometimes we have 2 days of tradition and sometimes one?
No, well, that's because I said, between one new moon and another new moon, it takes at least 29 and a half days. Actually, it's a little bit more than that, but 29 and a half days. Now, we cannot say that, let's say, Monday until noon or something like that is going to be, one month, and then at noon, it's going to be another one. So, either we have to make it as a 29 days, or we have to make it 30 days. But you cannot divide a day in half. So that's why, if the amount of time between the last new month and the new month
comes out,
it's only 29 days or something like that, 28 and a half, whatever it may be, and so on, then in that particular case, the previous month is only going to have 29 days. But if the amount of time is, that it's more than that, then in that particular case, then we have to say that this day is going to be the 30th of one month, but it's still called Rosh Chodesh because part of it is Rosh Chodesh. You understand? and the other one is the actual first day of the month.
So there's a connection between a month that has 30 days and 2 days of rest.
Yeah.
Immediate connection.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Any month that has 30 days, you know it's going to be 2 days.
Yes, any month that is, where the 30, right, it had 30 days, then the 30th day counts as first day of Rosh Chodesh for the following month, even though it's actually the 30th. Yeah.
halfway
during the period. That's correct. That's right. Because
and then it begins to
wane. Exactly. Right.
The last
one. Yeah. Right. It's exactly what he's saying over here at the first spot.
The difference is the beginning and the end.
Right.
So the one day is the actual beginning of the new month, and the whole month is that he's finished up the previous day.
Yeah. Correct. Right. But we call it, you know, we say 2 days Rosh Chodesh. So we're going to, when we branch Rosh Chodesh, we'll say it's going to be Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. Okay? Yeah. All right. So, this is the situation right now. So we see that Rabbi Gamliel demands that Rabbi Yehoshua appear before him on the day that Rabbi Yehoshua claimed was Yom Kippur, but he should come in his vachadik outfit, carrying his money and his stick and so on and so forth. Okay. So, Holach. Now we're talking about again about Rabbi Yehoshua. So he went Mitzvah Rabbi Akiva Meitzah. Okay. Now it could either be interpreted. The problem is that it lends itself to two interpretations. And he found Rabbi Akiva, who was in sorrow because he had heard the bad news about Rabbi Yehoshua, or it could be that it means that Rabbi Akiva more likely found him in sorrow. In other words, he found Rabbi Yehoshua, very, very sad. Omar lo, so he said to him, Yesh li l'mod, I have to tell you that I can learn from the Torah that Shekol Masha Osa Rabbi Gamliel Osa, that whatever Rabbi Gamliel did, it's done, that's all. In other words, he did it, and then you cannot reverse it right now. Right. And where is the pasuk that he finds it? Right, Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Eila Mu'adei Hashem Mikroi Kodesh." These are the festivals, the fixed festivals of the Lord, the days of solemn convocation, Asher Tikru Osam, right, which you have to proclaim. And if it's you have to proclaim, he says it's Bein Mizmanon, Bein Shalom Mizmanon. Okay, Ein Li Mu'ados Ela Eila. Whether it is the right time or whether it is the wrong time. But if the proclamation is made by the Beis Din that this is it,
that's it.
Then that's it. And you cannot make festivals except according to what has been determined. Okay. So in other words, Rabbi Akiva is telling him you have to obey what Rabbi Gamliel had to say. Bolo Eitzel Rabbi Dosa Ben Hukkanah. So Rabbi Yehoshua this time comes to Rabbi Dosa Ben Hukkanah. Remember, he's the one who said that the witnesses were wrong, and therefore the date proclaimed by Rabbi Gamliel was wrong, right? So he comes to him now, and he says to him, "Do what's all come?" So he says, "Oh, Malo." So Dosa Ben Hukkanah says to him, Im boyinonu lodun achar bezdin shel Rabbi Gamliel, says, if we are going to question the authority of the judgments made by the court of Rabbi Gamliel, then you know what? Tzrichin onu lodun achar kol bezdin and bezdin. She'omami mos Moshe v'elachshav. He says, then in that case, we're going to have to challenge each and every decision made by any bezdin from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu right until our own day. Shinemar, and he quotes a pasuk. Pasuk says, "Vayal Moshe v'Aaron Nadav Avihu v'Shivim Zikni Yisroel." Says, this is after the at the end of Parsha Mishpatim. You find it where they ratify, the people of Israel ratify the Ten Commandments. Okay, and it's written over there that Moshe and Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, they went up. That's where they went up. They went up towards Mount Sinai. Okay. So now the Gemara asks, Loma Loin is Parsha Shmosu Shal Zchenim. Why is it? Of course, is the drash of the Tosef Ben says. Why is it that the Torah never mentioned the names of the 70 elders? I mean, it mentions Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, right? And by the way, who are Nadav and Avihu?
Sons
of Aaron, right? Exactly. Okay. And you know, who are the 70 elders? So why are they not mentioned? So he says, it's Ela Lamalin. It's in order to teach us Shekol Shloisha Shloisha. That every Bezdin consisting of three judges, She'ondu Bezdin or Yisrael, who have constituted themselves as a Bezdin for the people of Israel, Harehu Kvezdino Shel Moshe, then it has the same authority as the Bezdin of Moshe Rabbeinu. So, in other words, he's telling him what Ragon said, this is the decision of his Bezdin, and therefore you have to submit to what he has to say.
That's the basis for, currently, if you want a Bezdin, you have three rabbis.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The
yeah, but that already we find in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that the
minimum
amount of judges is three. In many cases, you have
like
to have more than that. Yeah, well. Subject area to another subject area and so on, because they're familiar. So every person, the minimum amount of a person has to be three judges. Okay? Yeah.
You mentioned the 70 elders again.
Yeah, right.
The ones that the
Lord, we read it about this is the Halakha.
No,
last week.
Say,
we read it.
He's read before.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they say Eldad and
Medad
are two of them. This Rashi.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
This was afterwards. This was afterwards.
All right. Since
he's here
Eldad
before.
And Medad, I'll come back to that again. Okay. But remember, this pasuk, the one that we're referring to right now, this is in connection with the giving of the Torah Mount Sinai. What you're referring to is when Moshe Rabbeinu is so fed up with all the tzoras that he has as a leader, that the Rebbeinu Shalom tells him that you have to share your authority. You have to gather 70 people, and you know, they should share with you in the conducting, you know, the affairs of the people. Okay,
Rabbi. Seems like Rabbi Harkonos has changed his mind. Initially, he went along with Rabbi Jaffe.
You mean Joseph Ben Harkonos?
And now he's
well, he's telling him, all right, even if I disagree, look. But nevertheless, you have to obey what the, you know, the Bezdin of Rabbi Gamliel has said. This is what he's telling him, okay?
What the Bezdin said would have been published.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It would have been anarchy if they, you know, the people have to know one way and go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is exactly the point that, you know, why Rabbi Gamliel exercised his authority, because you know, he felt that when it comes to actually you know, the correct practice and so on, you can't have 25 different authorities. You see, you have to have one way that people know this is the right way. Okay, so we're not finished with the story yet. So at any rate, what was the reaction of Rabbi Yehoshua? So it says Notal Maklo Moso Biyodo, right? So he took his stick and his money in his hand, literally. Why the money in his hand? Because he didn't have pants pockets, okay? So he had to have, you know, like a bindle, you know. In other words, a little bundle in which he had his money. That's the way they went in those days, okay? The Holach LeYavne, Eitzel Rabban Gamliel. And he went to Yavne, to Rabban Gamliel, Biyom Shechol Yom HaKifurim Liyos Bechesh Bonoah, on a day which was Yom Kippur according to his own calculation. Okay? Omer Rabban Gamliel, so Rabban Gamliel arose uneshokol arosho, and he kissed him on his head. Omer lo, and he said unto him, go bishalom, come in peace, Rabbi v'talmidi, you who are my rabbi, my teacher, and also my talmid. Rabbi the Chochma, because you are my rabbi when it comes to wisdom. In other words, he recognizes the great wisdom of Rabbi Yehoshua, okay? But at the same time, the Talmidi, you are also my disciple, my pupil, Sheki Baltas Doroi, that you have accepted what I had to say. Okay, now the Gemara. Gemara says, Tanya, we have learned, Omar Lehem Rabbi Gamliel HaChachonim, that Rabbi Gamliel said to the sages, he says, Kach mikublanu beis avi abba. This is a Kabbalah. In other words, this is a tradition that I have from my father's father, from my grandfather. Now, don't forget, Rabbi Gamliel came from very, very illustrious background. You know, the original founder happened to be Hillel, right? And these were all the members of the dynasty of Hillel. You had Hillel, you had Rabbi Gamliel, you had Shimon, Shimon Gamliel, etc., etc., and so on. He came from very, very, and so he says, you know, I have this tradition from my grandfather. What tradition is he talking about? He's talking about the fact, you know, about the fact that he was willing to accept the testimony even when others disagreed with it. Okay? Remember what was the first instance? The first instance was that they said that they saw the moon, the old moon, early in the morning in the east, right? And the new moon they saw in the evening in the west. Okay. So he says, well, I have this tradition, he says, that pa'amim, that sometimes shabbat ba'aruka, ufa'am shabbat b'ktora, that at times, he says, the time between one new moon and another can either be longer or it can be shorter. Okay? So that therefore, in this particular case, if it was short, but it happens that way. And other times it's longer. Okay? Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, my Tama today, Rabbi. So he tells me, yes. What is the reason that the school of Rabbi, remember, Rabbi was, you know, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, okay, was also a descendant, okay? So what is the reason that, you know, that we know that sometimes the moon, the phases, you know, between one old moon and one new moon could be a shorter period or it could be a longer one. He says, it's based on a pasuk. Always looking for a pasuk, right? Nichsiv. What does the pasuk say? This is, of course, in Tilim, Kuf Dalet, you know, Borchi Nafshi, right? You say it to every Rosh Chodesh, right? You're a good Jew, you say it in the winter, Shabbos afternoon too. Okay. But we know we say it every Rosh Chodesh. We'll be saying it on Monday and Tuesday morning. That's the Shabbos. It says, also Yerech Lamoadim, that he made the moon, okay, for the festive days, right? Shemesh Yodam Mevoen, the sun knows whence it comes. The word Mevoen, in this case, means, you know, when the sun is expected to rise, okay? Because otherwise, sometimes, when you have, for example, the story about Yaakov Avinu, about the sunset over there, what does it say over there? Kivah HaShemesh. And therefore, the phrase could mean just the opposite. It could mean not, you know, the rising, because usually that we refer to as like Zericha, which means the time when the sun begins to shine, right?
Yes. Say half or lane?
What?
Half or lane?
Alright, you want to interpret it that way, but we'll see. I mean, how is he interpreting? So this is the question. How did Rav Yochanan understand it? So he says, Shemesh hu diyodim evor. He says, the sun knows. It has a fixed time when it rises in the morning, it has a fixed time when it goes down at night. I mean, if we didn't have these calculations, okay, we would be stuck in trying to figure out, for example, when is Lift mentioned on this and this day, when is Lift mentioned on another day, and so on. And when is the right time to daven in the morning, when is the right time to daven in the afternoon, etc. So the sun has its fixed times, and on the basis of astronomical observation, we can predict what it's going to be. Okay. But your reach lo yodah mivor, he says, but the moon, it doesn't know mivor. So that the moon could sometimes appear a little earlier, and the moon could sometimes appear a little later. This is what he says. Okay. Rabbi Chiyo Chazer Lesiyaro, he saw the moon. Incidentally, notice that the Aramaic word for Levona, right, is Sihaba over here. Naturally, what does it suggest to you? Sihara. Does it suggest anything? The answer is Sahara.
What word are you talking about?
Why is the Sahara Desert? Why is it called Sahara? The answer is because it's named after the moon. Okay?
Oh,
really? Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Why? The moon shines bright at night over there. Okay? They don't have all the haze and so on and so forth. Alright, so at any rate, Rabbi Chiya saw the moon, the Havaka'i B'tzafra, right, he saw that it was standing, literally, there it was in the morning, the Esrim Tisha, right, of the 29th day. But he was very unhappy about it, because he wanted Rosh Chodesh to be a little later, right? So what did he do? So he says, Shokal Kala, he picked up a clot of earth, Pasak Behir, and he threw it at the moon. And Omar, and he said, Lo'urta Be'inu Nekidushi Bach, he says, at night we have to make you, you know, into Rosh Chodesh. Yad Kayemis Hacha, and you're still standing over here. In other words, obviously from the appearance of the moon, it wasn't anywhere near new moon. And he says, we needed that the new moon that Rosh Chodesh should be tonight. So in that case, he says, Zilich say, or Kase, go, conceal yourself, disappear, so that we can have a new moon at night.
Sounds like the film.
Yeah, reminds you of the right catching the moon at the barrel, right?
They put human quality to the sun and the moon, like the sun knows what it's doing, but the
right.
Moon knows
right. Yeah. It's very, very interesting.
Well, that's where you get moon.
Right. It's a very interesting tomorrow.
The moon is for me.
Omale Rabbi the Rabbi Chiya. So Rabbi said to Rabbi Chiya, okay. And he said, Zila Ein Tov, the Kachel Yach. He says, you know what? Go to Ein Tov, and there you will sanctify the moon. In other words, go to a different location. Maybe it's the name of a place, this we don't know. You know, maybe Ein Tov is simply like Ein Tova. In other words, go to a place where you can see the moon better. Okay? And there you'll see the new moon coming, and then you'll be able to declare that the new month is. Don't stay over here. Don't throw any clouds at the moon. That's not going to help. But go to a different location where you can see the new moon. Now, obviously, there are certain areas where you can see. I mean, if you go on top of a mountain, it's understood that you'll probably have a much better view than you will if you're down in the valley.
Wasn't that the importance, though, of always having the moon be sighted near Jerusalem, so that you, so
yeah, well, that would be a big advantage. Yeah, that would be a big advantage, because then the Beis Din could judge earlier, you know, as to whether it's Rosh Chodesh or not. Correct.
Because of the mountainous, or the hilly side.
Yeah, right, right, yeah. The Shola Ushlach Li Simon says, after you have declared that it is Rosh Chodesh, send me a following message. What is the following message? The following message is David Melech Yisrael Chavakaya. David, the king of Israel, lives eternally. Okay. Yeah, this is the origin. This is the origin. Right. Alive and right. Okay. I don't have to tell you, I mean, it's a little bit mysterious, number one. I mean, why this message? There is a good chance, in my opinion, that remember that this is after the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, that you have the Roman authorities who are not encouraging the practice of Yiddishkeit. We know that they tried to interfere at various times, even in the time of Hadrian, for example, to suppress it altogether, and there are other periods in which Judaism was very grave circumstances because of Roman oppression. And so he felt that if he could send a secret message, the Roman authorities wouldn't understand it. They would simply say, David Ben Israel Chavakayim, okay, so God's fine, so King David lives forever, okay. But this is one possibility, okay. Rashi says as follows, we can take a look way, way down over there. David Ben Israel says, Nimshal Kalabona, he says, David was compared to the moon. Shenema bo, as the pasuk says, this is the pasuk in Tehillim, where it says, Kiso kashemish negdi, that his throne is like the sun before me, kayoreach, and like the moon, yikon olam. His throne will be established forever. Okay? So that therefore, as we know, in our hopes and our prayers, the continuity that we're looking forward, you know, to Mashiach ben David, I mean, is alive to this very day, and we say, David, of Israel, Chaydekayat. It's not just a song, but it's also an idea that we have, okay. And of course, those of you who are familiar with Kiddush Levana, you know that this is one of the phrases that we recite when we recite Kiddush Levana. You know, don't we say, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem. This is part of the, you know,
Roger, you're saying
ritual,
political
right.
Statement,
yes,
to
it could
encourage
be, yes.
People to remember that Judaism will continue.
Right, right, absolutely.
And that the kingdom of
right.
Israel will be reborn or
yes.
Somehow.
Yes, well, as I say, this is, it seems to me this would be the basic reason why he asked them to give him this message.
I'm puzzled by one thing.
Yes.
They were not allowed, or they were afraid of passing religious things.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be just as dangerous to be talking about the King of Israel, David Melech?
Apparently right. Not. I could say that they're simply quoting a biblical story or something like that. You understand? Even though we don't find this written in the Bible, but still, you know, right? Maybe the Romans weren't such great Talmidei Chachamim, you know, that they knew every verse by heart, okay? Although we do have disputations mentioned in the Talmud from time to time, or the Medrash mentioned disputes between Jewish authorities and Greek philosophers and Romans and so on and so forth. And many cases, by the way, Rabbi Yeshua happened to be very, very friendly with the Roman authorities, which is very interesting. And he interceded on behalf of the Jews time and again. He was very, very close to, according to the Gemara, to the Caesar, you know, the Roman Caesar, okay, the emperor. And if not, if it wasn't the emperor, then at least it was the governor of the Roman governor of the province, okay. So you had your good times and you had your bad times of it. So this obviously is from a time which wasn't so good, and therefore it was necessary to send the secret message. Okay. Since we're talking about persecution, one of the basic reasons why, for example, they found it necessary to finally do away with the whole thing of having the Beis Din declare when it's Rosh Chodesh is precisely because of persecution this time by the Christian authorities who became the ruler of the Roman Empire. Okay? Christianity was out in order to make Judaism as illegitimate as it possibly could. And so therefore this you know, the Jewish authorities saw that it would be impossible to get to the Sanhedrin in order to declare when is the new month. And therefore, that's why Hillel, the second Hillel, this is why he decided that it was time to make up a calendar based upon the astronomical observations that they were familiar with, and work it out so that we would always know when a Yontav is going to occur. Okay?
Actually,
that's what we follow to this
they
day.
They are aware of the astronomical scheduling long before.
Yeah.
But they still maintained the Beis Din has to set the time.
Yeah,
but they could not almost immediately tell if somebody was correct or not
correct.
Or close by.
Yeah. No question about that. Okay. I'll point out one other thing. Because of persecution, we're familiar with the Musaf service on Shabbos, okay? Musaf on Shabbos. You notice that during the Kedusha, what do we say? We say Shema Yisrael, Adeshem Elokeinu, Adeshem Echad, right? And then Adeshem Elokeinu, Leyos Lachem Elokim, Ani Adeshem Elokeichem, which is, of course, what? It's the end of the Shema Yisrael. So the question is, why is it there in the Musaf service? So the answer is, but again, because the Roman authorities sent spies, they wanted to discourage the Jews from saying Kriya Shema. And so they would come into shul in the morning on Shabbos, or on Yom Tov, of course, and, you know, they would sent spies to listen to find out if the Jews were saying Shema Yisrael. So they didn't say it. But after the spies had left, then they included this in the Musaf service. They said the Shema Yisrael, and that way, you know, they proclaim the fact that God is our God, right? And they defied the authorities. But this is why, to this very day, we have it as part of the Musaf service.
But vice versa, they were also wanted to discourage a certain Kedusha. So in Shabbat and Shachas, between before Shema, we also have Kedusha.
Not before Shema.
Before Shema?
No.
After Baruch Hu.
Yeah.
Hashem is Kedusha again. Small Kedusha afterwards.
Oh, that what they're talking about. Yeah, I didn't quite grasp that. Yeah, what they're referring to. Right. Yeah, okay, very good.
But they also have that short Shema, the beginning of the
Shacharis. That's for a different reason. That's for a different reason.
That
came people get up late.
Exactly.
People get up late.
Exactly, because we want, as we were learning at the beginning, you know, that we should try to daven at the right time in the morning, right? But people do get up later. So in order to make sure that you're still saying Krishna at its proper time, this is why they introduced to say the Shema Yisrael, you know, and so on. And many people add also the first paragraph of the Shema. Right, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, let me just conclude over here. I thought we'd finish the whole thing, but we'll finish it next week in the subject. Okay. Okay. So anyway, Okay. So anyway, you told Rabbi Chia right to go and to declare and then to send a message. Okay. Tana Rabba. Our sages taught as follows. They say, Pam achas, happened one time, is Kashru Shamayim Bovim, that the sky simply became literally tied up with clouds. In other words, very, very cloudy. The Nireis the Muslimono, and it seemed that the moon was appearing, the Esmatish of the Chodesh, right, on the 29th day of the month. Kiswurim Ha'om, when the people decided, or the opinion really is what Kiswurim means, Lomar Rosh Chodesh, wanted to say that, oh, it's now it's Rosh Chodesh, right? Uvikshu Bezdin Lekhatsho, and the Bezdin wanted to declare that it was Takim Rosh Chodesh, literally to sanctify it. So Omalahim, Rabbi Gamliel, so Rabbi Gil said to them, Takhme Kublanu Beis Aviyabo, wait a minute, it says, I have a tradition from my Tata's father, my Tata's Tata, from my Zedek, namely, Ein Chidusho Shalavona, that the new moon is not going to appear pechuso less than may esrim v'tisha yom umechza 29 and a half days ushnei shlishi shoah and another 2/3 of an hour, right? The ayin gimel and 73 chalokim. Now hamish is a chelik. A chelik is something like 1/10/80th of an hour, 1/10/80 of an hour. We always say, you know, so many, right, so many minutes and so many chalokim. So it says, right, 1/1080. Okay. I don't know. He figured it out. Figured it out. Right.
3 seconds.
Yeah, whatever. It's a very short amount of period. But as you can see, I mean, this is why normally when we say the boiler is going to be this and this hour, and this and this, right, and this and this. Right. So this is the basis of it, okay? So he says, this is my, my tradition, and therefore, the time that they thought that they had seen the moon is a little too short, right? It was too early, so that therefore he didn't declare it, right? And he says, and the Gemara continues, and it says, V'yosa hayom, and that very day, in other words, when they saw the moon up in the, where they thought they saw the moon in the clouds, Mesa Imusha ben Zoza, alright, the mother of a certain ben Zoza, apparently he was a scholar, the mother died. The Hispida Rabban Gamliel Hespet Godol, and Rabbi Gamliel gave a great big eulogy for her. Lo mipnei sheru yolacha, not because she deserves such a long husband, Ela Kadesh Sheidu Ha'om, but that the people should know, Shalom Kitchu Bezdin and Safadish, that the Bezdin had not yet declared that it was officially Mishaydish. Why? Because we have a law saying that you're not allowed to make a hesped, you're not allowed to give a eulogy on Rosh Chodesh. I don't have to tell you in America, it's violated, we say, even though we're not supposed to give a eulogy today, because it's Rosh Chodesh, or because it's the Yom Yom, but nevertheless... Okay. But they were more strict about it in those days, that on a day like Rosh Chodesh, they talked to not give a eulogy. Okay. All right, so, Yetzah Hashem, we will meet... I still have something left over here. It's a side B right now, and we still have probably about 15, 20 minutes. Yeah. All right, tonight is the 5th of July, 2000. Gewalt geschrien, okay. And we are continuing on Chof Hei, Rosh Hashanah, Chof Hei, Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the page where we left off last week. Okay? I want to remind you that we are still discussing the last Mishnah that we have over here, which began on the bottom of Chof Dalet Amud Beis, where the question is more important what we have on the top of page Chof Hei on the top, okay? There are witnesses who came in and they said that we saw the moon in the morning, meaning the old moon, right, in the morning in the east, and then in the evening we saw it in the west. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was convinced that they were false prophets, but Rabbi Gamliel said, I accept their testimony. Okay? And then another case where witnesses said, you know, we saw it actually at the time that it should be coming, namely, of course, you know, after the 29th day, in other words, at the beginning of the 30th day of the month, but at that night, you know, when it should have been there, Lonira, it wasn't there. And again, Rabbi Gamliel accepted their testimony. It's the top of the page of Chof Hei. Yeah. Okay?
Which side? We haven't been here
in the
while.
Middle, in the middle.
Right here?
Yeah, okay. Right. So Rabbi Gamliel accepted their testimony, right? But what did we find out? We found out that Rabbi Dosa ben Horkinas said that they're liars. How could they say that, for example, a woman has already given birth, meaning, you know, the moon has already appeared that they saw, when at the same time you see that the moon is, you know, that the woman is still pregnant. Kresa ben Shineha, right, her stomach. Literally extends as far as her teeth, so, but it means that she has a great big belly yet. Okay? So, and then we saw the Rabbi Yeshua said, you know, I agree with what you have to say. Well, when Rabbi Gamliel heard that, he, of course, he objected to the fact, you know, because Rabbi Gamliel had accepted their testimony, and therefore, on the basis of the testimony, he had already declared that it is Rosh Chodesh. Whereas, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it was a mistake, and it should have been a day later. Get the picture. Okay. So that, therefore, Rabbi Gamliel felt that he was being challenged, and so we read, you know, that he issued an order to Rabbi Yeshua to appear before him on the day when Rabbi Yeshua, according to his calculation, was Yom Kippur. And he said, you come to me at that time, with your stick, with your purse, and so on and so forth. In other words, that you should desecrate your day and come and appear before me, before the best thing. Okay? And Rabbi Yeshua, of course, felt very bad, and then we read, you know, that he went to Rabbi Yakiva, and he went afterwards to Rabbi Dosa ben Horkinas, and now that's where we start again tonight, okay? Because they're expanding now upon the Mishnah. And, yes.
What about where he comes and he says, tell me,
Yeah. The Mishnah concluded with that. But we'll come back to we'll review that again as we go along. It's beautiful, right? I agree.
Yes. Something comes to my mind. Did not the rabbi who gave that order, Gamliel,
yes.
Wasn't he actually committing a transgression when he was, by his calculations, asking a highest Jew to desecrate Yom Kippur?
Well, he wanted to enforce the discipline of his business.
I understand that. Well,
that's the reason, right?
Yeah. But in effect, what are you doing?
Yeah, needless to say, he certainly was hurting the feelings of Rabbi Yehoshua. There's no question.
Well, more than hurting the feelings.
Rabbi Yom Liel was certain that he was right at the time.
He was sure.
He was certain that he was correct.
Yeah, I'm saying he's like asking another Jew to do
Yisha. Right. Saul Hawaii.
Yeah.
To violate.
Right.
His answer would be that I don't consider.
Well, I don't consider that a Yom Kippur. That's all. I mean, you have no business making a Yom Kippur separate from the Yom Kippur that, according to my calculations, is Yom Kippur. You see, that's it. It's to enforce the discipline.
Yeah.
Okay. So, right. All right. So, we learned last week that, Rabbi Akiva said to him that, you have to obey because in this particular case, it is the Beis Din that has the authority to decide when is Rosh Chodesh and when it's not. And if you're going to question the authority of the Beis Din in this particular case, you'll have to question the authority of any Beis Din that has existed in Jewish history. This was the point that he was making to him. So, of course, he went, and at this time he decided to go to Rabbi Dosa ben Horkinas, right, who was the person who originally made the statement that it's not right. I agree with you, Rabbi Yeshua, that he made a mistake in the calculation that he made, right? Okay. So this is down at the bottom. Okay. I could have read everything over there, but, we already did this before. So that's why I want to start and begin with a new one. So we are now six lines from the bottom. Okay. It says over there, Bolo Eitzel, Rabbi Dozeman, Rokhanas, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, if we take a look at the Mishnah, we'll see that what did Dosa ben Horkinas say to Rabbi Yehoshua. So that's up on top. He said, first of all, what I already mentioned. He says, that if we were to question the Beis Din of Rabbi Gamliel, then we have to question any single Beis Din that has existed, be most Moshe v'Yalachshav, from the days of Moshe right until now. Shinemar. And I'm still quoting from the Mishnah because now we'll see how it expands in the Gemara. All right, the Torah says, "Vayal Moshe v'Yaharon Nodav v'Avihu Mishum Mizikle Yisrael." That after the giving of the Ten Commandments, when they accepted, they said Nasim and Nishman. So then it's written that Moshe and Aaron, Nodav and Avihu, who happen to be, of course, the sons of Aaron, right, the two older sons, and 70 of the elders of Israel. Okay? And the Gemara wants to know, and by the way, let me add parenthetically, that we read in Parsha Bahaloscha, right, that Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, he had it, right? People are yelling, give us food, we don't like the man, we're tired of it, we want to do change some diet and everything else. And take us back to Egypt, where we had fish and all kinds of vegetables, etc., right? Garlic and leeks, etc. Things were so good in Egypt, why did we ever leave, right?
Vegetarianism was...
no, right, I wouldn't say that they were vegetarians, no. Right, not okay. Necessarily, okay?
All right, okay?
So, at any rate... at that particular point, the Rebbeinu Shalom says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't do it all by yourself, right? He says to him, Esfali Ish Mezikla Yisrael, right? Choose, he says, gather 70 people among the elders of Israel, you know that they are leaders and so on and so forth, and let them work together with you in helping to run this people. Okay. So, there are those who identified the 70 at that particular point with the 70 who went up with with Moshe and Aaron and Nodav v'Avihu down Sinai. And of course, don't forget, what did the Rebbeinu Shalom say to Moshe when he told him to choose these 70 people? He said, you know, that we will take some of this Holy Spirit that you have, right, and give it unto them. So in other words, they too achieved like a minor status of being what? Of being Nevi'im. You understand? So therefore they're important. All right, so now the question is raised by those of the Hawkeye. So tell me, he says, why aren't their names mentioned? I don't know if it ties in with my sermon that I gave this past Shabbos about the difference between, you know, the Haftorah, right, and the Torah. That
is,
right, okay. But it's interesting. The question they ask is, so why weren't their names mentioned? Okay? All of those partial Shmosei, right? So Elul Amid, but it says in the Mishnah, to teach us that called Shlosha Shlosha Shonim Bezdin on Israel, that whenever you have a Bezdin, whoever those three judges may be, Harehu Kaveis Dino Shel Moshe, right? So they are like the Bezdin that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Okay. In other words, they have that, and the individual Bezdin has the same authority as the best in the motion, the original one. All right.
Excuse me, where are you?
Okay, I was quoting from the Mishnah.
Oh, from the Mishnah.
Now
okay,
we go back to the Gemara,
fine,
six lines from the bottom.
Right,
okay?
fine, very good.
Right, okay. Where it says, Tanurabonim, you see that? Right. So we have another version as to the question that he raised in the Mishnah.
Okay.
Lama is Parsha Shemosim Shals Kenim Halolu, right? Why weren't the names of these elders mentioned specifically? So the answer given in the Baraisa over here that is quoted, actually it's a Tosefta, is Shelo Yomar Odom Ploni Kemoshe V'Yare Ploni Kenodom Abihu Ploni Keodom Lomedom, that a person should not say, and here I have to tell you, unfortunately there is no punctuation in the Gemara.
Yeah.
Okay?
I'm noticing that.
Okay, there's no punctuation. So if you read it as a statement, so it would be so that nobody should say that so-and-so is like Moshe and Aaron. Yeah? But that doesn't make sense, because what is he trying to say? He's trying to say that the authority of the Beis Din, of a particular Beis Din, is equal in importance to the authority of Moshe. So we have to read it not as a statement, but we have to read it as a question. In other words, nobody should say what?
How would you read this in Hebrew then?
No, Shelo Yomar Odom, right. Ploini Kemoshe V'Yara? You mean to say that so and so, okay, is like Moshe and Aaron? Right, right. Yeah. Ploini Kenova Vavihu, you mean to say that this particular Dayan, this particular judge, is in the same category as none of the Avihu were mentioned over there, right? Or Ploini Ki Eldo de Medot, or like Eldo, remember that these two are the ones who were prophesied specifically, yes.
Right. This, that last one gives me a little problem, because Eldad and Medad were two of the 70. So
that's
why
correct.
Why were the 68?
But they weren't included among the 70. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, they were outside
the camp. The Gemara says,
I've always been puzzled by that. They
okay.
remained in the camp, but I always thought they were two of the 70.
Okay, this is explained in the Gemara Sanhedrin.
Okay.
The Torah says, the Hema Baksubim, literally, they're among those whose names were written. But they did not go to the tent together, you know, where Moshe had gathered them, okay?
Okay.
So Gemara and Sanhedrin asked the following question. Who were Eldad and Medad? How it comes and so and so. He said, how did Moshe Rabbeinu choose 70? He really wanted to choose 6 from each and every tribe, right? So in that case, it would make how many? 72, right? It would be 72. Okay, but the Rebbeinu Shalom didn't say choose 72, he said choose 70. So that therefore, how would they decide it? So the answer is that each of the candidates, their name was written on a lottery ticket, okay? And then they pulled them out. So if it said Zokain, then it means you are one of the Zokainim, right? In other words. But if you got a blank, then it means that you weren't. Okay. So Eldad and Medad, it says, Haman Baksuvim, their names actually were pulled out of the hat, and it said Zokin for them. But they did not want to shame the two who were not mentioned. So therefore, they gave their ticket, so to speak, you know, to the two who were unlucky. And that's why it's written, you know, that the Heba Baksuvim, the Lo Yotzu
Ohala. Right. Well, in that case, right, they did have 72 then. If they gave theirs away.
Yeah. So that would be 70. They gave it to the other two.
And what happened to them?
They did not go there.
They didn't
but
go
nevertheless,
there.
When
but they were then considered.
But then, when the spirit came, it descended upon them. You know, they were they began to prophesy.
So
right?
Would, so that it would make it 72.
No,
but not officially.
Oh, they were not official. Right. They were not in the official count. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
This is a little bit of a corollary question. I don't want me to get us off the subject, but about what you said in choosing six from each tribe.
Right.
It always bothers me. Here, which of the tribes are they talking about? Because you have Ephraim and Manasseh, and
right,
then you have Levi. So
right.
You could actually make an argument. I mean, who then comprises the 12
tribes?
All
right, it's very simple. Okay. In certain cases, they count Levi as a separate tribe, you know, like taking the census, right?
Sure. Of
and Yosef as being a separate tribe.
Okay.
But officially, Levi was not considered a separate tribe for the purposes of inheriting the land in Eretz Israel.
Right.
Okay? And Yosef, instead, became Menashe and Ephraim. Okay?
Okay?
So that's how you wind up again with 12. Okay? All right. So, as I said, you have to read this as a question, and they say, Pliny, is Pliny like not of Avihu or Keldot and Medot, but like Moshe and Aaron? Of course not. And not only that, but we have a Pasuk, there of course, well, that happens to be in the Haftorah that we'll be reading this week. Okay, it's written, Vayomer Shmuel El Ha'am, right? And Shmuel said to the people, Hashem, Asher Asos Moshe is Aaron, right? Hashem, who literally made Moses and Aaron, in other words, he was the one who called, you know, Moshe and Aaron, you know, to be leaders of the people, right? And then he continues to mention a little bit later on in the same chapter, it's written, and then it says, V'yomer, and it says, V'yishlach ad Hashem es Yehubal, V'yes Bidon, V'yes Yiftoch, V'yes Shmuel.
Right.
He says that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam sent as leaders of the Jewish people Yerubal and Bedan and Yiftach and Shmuel. Alright, so of course we want to identify some of these characters. Who are these people mentioned by Shmuel? So the answer is Yerubal, he says, Zeh Gidon. If you remember in the book of Judges, Shoftim, right, there is Gidon. Gidon saved the people from the hands of the Midianites that particular time, right? And they gave him the nickname Yerubal. Why did they give him the name Yerubal? Right? Malama Nikra Shmo Yerubal. So the answer is Shosim Mariva Imhabal, because he carried on a campaign, literally a fight or whatever you want to say, against the Baal, right? He carried on war. The people were addicted to worshipping Baal, so he fought it, and so that was his violence. So because of that, they called him not just Gidon, but they called him Yerubal. Alright, so now we know who Yerubal is. That's Gidon. Okay. Who is Bedan? That's right. Zeh Shimshon. Exactly what it says. So the question is, how do we know that Shimshon is called Bedan in this particular passage? Right? For Lama Nikrash Bo Bedan. So the answer is, Da'asi Bedan. Because he came from the tribe of
Dan.
So therefore he was Bedan. In other words, is like sort of like say Ben Dan, right? So in other words, he came from the tribe of Dan. Okay. Good. Yiftach, he says, Kamashmoy. Yiftach, he's the same Yiftach who's mentioned in the book of Judges. Same one. Okay, so now we're ready for the next side of the page. Kopei of the days. Will I give it out yet? I don't think so. Okay, so. Right. Anybody else who needs this new page? Okay. All right. The Omer. And we have another poster. That's what the Omer means. And another poster says as follows. What? Moshe v'yahweh v'choy hanor v'shmul v'korei shmo. Okay. This, of course, is a pasuk, you know, that we have in the beginning of the Chul Ha'Ranunah, if you remember, actually, it starts the end of the Chul Ha'Ranunah. Right? Moshe v'yahweh v'choy hanor. Just as Moses and Aaron among his priests were Shmuel, and just like Shmuel, they were Korei Shmo. In other words, they called upon the name of God. In other words, they were leaders who spoke in the name of God. Okay? Shokal HaKosuv Shlosha Kalei Olam Kishlesha Chamurei. Morris says, you know what? This verse equates three who are what we would call Kali Olam, in other words, lightweights, right?
It's good, Kali Olam, yeah.
With three who are Chamure Olam, in other words, heavyweights, guys, right? Yeah. Naturally, who are the heavyweights? Heavyweights are Moshe and Aaron and Shmuel, right? Whereas in the previous pasuk that was quoted, you know, who did he mention? Yerubal. Right, and Dagon, Samson, right, and Yiftach, you know, so they were lightweights in comparison to these, okay? All right. Yet, this teaches us an important thing. Loma Lachot, it's to teach you as follows. Yerubal Bedorom, that Yerubal, as a leader in his own generation, is equal to Kemoshe Bedorom. When I say equal, I'll explain that in a moment, right? But anyway, he's equal to Moses and his generation. Bedon Bedoro, right? Samson and his generation. Kiara Bedoro, like Aaron and his generation. Yiftach Bedoro, Jephthah and his generation. Kishmuel Bedoro was like Samuel in his generation. The Lamedcha, and it teaches you,